The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I am Seth Leibson. Phone number for y'all to enter into the conversation, add to it, or argue with it, 602-508-0960, 602-5089-60. Ms. Terry, good to see you. Mr. Bill, good to see you, sir. I did not prepare a monologue today because I had been on the phone almost all day talking about and talking with people over what the Arizona Supreme Court did and where that leaves Arizona, and frankly, the Republican Party nationally on issues of abortion. I have a lot to say about this further than what we said yesterday. And the first two things, you know what? The first three things I want to say are, I think it was Jenna Ellis on Twix who said this today, wrote this morning. She said, we're finding out that a lot of people who claim to be pro-life have very different meanings of what it means to be pro-life. Kind of reminds you of that speech of Abraham Lincoln's at the sanitation fair where he says everyone talks of freedom and liberty, but by using the word liberty, we don't all mean the same thing. I think that is a valid point and something we need to iron out for ourselves. Second thing, it gives me no pleasure to say this, but people ask, do you ever criticize Republicans? Yeah, you bet I do, including Donald Trump. And I have a little bit of a criticism for the way he's talking about it right now. For on Monday, he made it very clear he wanted no national effort on abortion and staked out the position, which is not unique in the Republican Party. A lot of people have this position that it should be left up to the states entirely. I have a lot to say about that, but once you do stake that out as over and against a federal, shall we say, floor on the issue, it becomes a little weird, I have to tell you, if not inconsistent, to then condemn or criticize what the states do once they do it. So he has criticized Florida on what they did, and yet just today he criticized Arizona on what happened as a result of the Supreme Court decision yesterday. And then said, but the governor in Arizona and others, I have no doubt, will bring the law into reason. Does he know who our governor is? Does he think she will bring the law into reason or anything into reason? Does he know if she can even reason? Because I don't. The third thing that I guess was on my mind about it was the way we talk about it. And how we've talked about it successfully in the past versus, I don't know if we're convincing anyone on it anymore. I just don't know. It's increasingly difficult to convince people to switch views on issues. Now, what's interesting as I say that, and I'm thinking this out loud as I'm talking, and I'd love your thoughts on this, it seems almost easier to switch people on parties than on issues, doesn't it? Am I wrong about that? It seems there's more fluidity of the ability to get a Democrat to vote for a Republican here and there and a Republican to vote for a Democrat here and there than it is to get people to change their minds on hardened issues. Now, not all hardened issues. I think a lot of people have changed their minds on immigration. Why is that? Because it got so bad? Because it got so bad that you could no longer defend the illegal immigration issue the way it was being dealt with? Perhaps that's some of it. Perhaps it's the effluent of the policy itself, the crime, the drugs, the suppressed wages. Perhaps it's that. But what about on issues of foreign policy? Seems to be a little harder to change people's minds on that. Not impossible, but harder. But abortion, awfully difficult. One of the interesting things I noted when I first started getting involved a little bit more seriously in the pro-life movement was how much of the pro-life movement was made up of people who had changed their minds, indeed made up of women who had actually had abortions. And there's any number of examples I can tell you about, from Concerned Women for America to the Family Research Council. What was her first name? McCorvey herself, even the Roe in Roe versus Wade. That was her name, wasn't it, McCorvey? I can't remember her first name. Donna or Jean? I should know it, and I haven't looked at it in a long time. But even she had changed her mind to become a pro. The banner name in Roe v. Wade, Jane Roe, Miss McCorvey, she too had become pro-life, as had the nurses in that Illinois hospital who started noticing the need for a Born Alive Infant Protection Act. They all were once on the other side. But we seem to have hit a freezing point. And I was looking at the polling on it, and it just doesn't move that much anymore. So my thought was how we talk about it and how we talked about it when we were able to move people. You know who moved people? He himself was moved on this. Ronald Reagan moved people on this issue. And he did it a few different ways. The first time he got seriously engaged on it was in a radio address he delivered in 1975. He used to give these radio addresses throughout the 70s after he had left the governorship of California. And he gave one on abortion, and I thought I would read it to you to get kind of the hard fist under the velvet glove that Ronald Reagan approached issues with, and the kind of thinking. This is from the book Reagan in His Own Hand. He wrote this himself, and if you have the book, you can see where he scribbled out and rewrote his own sentences. You can see his mind at work. He opened the show, "An unborn child's property rights are protected by law. Its right to life is not. I'll be right back." That was how he teased it, and then the commercial. Pretty strong tease, isn't it? An unborn child's property rights are protected by law. Its right to life is not. Anyone think about things that way anymore? That simple sentence, which was really a tease, puts the brain in gear a little on this, doesn't it? Then he comes back from the commercial break and he says, 8 years ago, when I became governor, I found myself involved almost immediately in a controversy over abortion. It was a subject I'd never given much thought to, and one upon which I didn't really have an opinion. But now I was governor, and it turned out to be something I couldn't walk away from. A bill had been introduced in the California legislature to make abortion available upon demand. The pro and anti forces were already marshaling their troops, and emotions were running high. Then the author of the bill sent word down that he'd amend his bill to anything I felt I could sign. The ball, to coin a cliche, was now in my court. Suddenly, I had to have a position on abortion. I did more studying and soul searching than on anything that was to face me as governor. I discovered that neither medicine, law, or theology had ever really found a common ground on the subject. Some believed an unborn child was no more than a growth on the body of a female, and she should be able to remove it as she would her appendix. Others felt a human life existed from the moment the fertilized egg was implanted in the womb. Strangely enough, the same legislature couldn't agree on abortion and had unanimously passed a law making it murder to abuse a pregnant woman so as to cause the death of her unborn child became illegal. Another inconsistency, the unborn have property rights protected by law. A man can will his estate to his wife and children and any children yet to be born of his marriage. Yet the proposed abortion law would deny the unborn the protection of the law in preserving that unborn child's life. I went to the lawyers on my staff and posed a hypothetical question. What if a pregnant woman became a widow during her pregnancy and found her husband had left his fortune to her and the unborn child? Under the proposed abortion law, she could take the life of her child and inherit not half, but all of her husband's estate. Wouldn't that be murder for financial gain? The only answer I got was that they were glad I wasn't asking this question on the bar exam. There is quite common acceptance in medical circles that the cell, let's call it the egg, once it has been fertilized, is on its way as a human being with individual physical traits and personality characteristics. My answer as to what kind of abortion bill I could sign was one that recognized an abortion as the taking of human life. In our Judeo-Christian religion, we recognize the right to take life in defense of our own. Therefore, an abortion is justified when it is done in self-defense. My belief is that a woman has the right to protect her own life and health against even her unborn child, but should not be made to bear a child resulting from the violation of her own portion, her own person, but that abortion can only be tolerated as an act of self-defense. That was Reagan on abortion. Interesting way to think about it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Seth Leibson here for my friends from the Midas Gold Group War Room. The MAGA veterans at Midas point out that the Federal Reserve note does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank. While the federal debt doesn't belong to the Federal Reserve Bank, it belongs to you. This is your wake-up call to what the Midas Gold Group veterans believe the central bank and government are trying to do, a controlled demolition of our current system with a central bank digital currency to take complete and utter control of our transactional freedoms. Protect yourself. Turn this wake-up call into a phone call to veteran-owned Midas Gold Group. That's 480-360-3000. Or go to MidasGoldGroup.com. That's 480-360-3000. Or MidasGoldGroup.com. Always faithful, Midas Gold Group, MAGA, and proud of it. MidasGoldGroup.com. One more thing on Ronald Reagan and abortion, if I might. Maybe two more. But this one was new to me as of about a year ago. I did not know of this story. And again, it's perhaps in consideration of a gentler way to talk about this very hardcore issue, very divisive issue. Seemingly an issue that shouldn't be that divisive if talked about, I think, the right way. But in 1970, Charles M. Schulz, Charlie Brown's creator, Peanuts cartoonist, did a cartoon. And you can look it up. And it's Linus approaching his sister Lucy, who's watching TV. And Linus comes in, and I'm looking at it now, and he says, "I have a question." This is Charles Schulz in a nationally syndicated cartoon. Linus says, "What would happen if there were a beautiful and highly intelligent child up in heaven waiting to be born, and his or her parents decided that the two children they already had were enough?" Wow. Cartoon. Lucy says, "Your ignorance of theology and medicine is appalling." Linus walks away and says, "I still think it's a good question." Ronald Reagan read that cartoon, and he wrote a letter to Charles Schulz. Would you like to hear it? "Dear Charles, I continue to be a morning devotee of your entire cast and was delighted the other day to see that my hero Snoopy has also experienced the joys of a campus disturbance. I write particularly, though, of one of your strips a few weeks ago, which continues to haunt me in a very nice way. Linus was asking Lucy about what happens to a very nice baby waiting in heaven to be born when the mother and father decide they don't want it. Lucy, of course, put him down severely. Linus finished simply remarking he still thought it was a good question. Perhaps my feeling for Linus's question stems from the soul-searching I had to do a few years ago with regard to the liberalizing of our abortion laws. The author of the legislation wanted to go all the way and simply make it a matter of personal choice and wide open. I probably did more studying on that subject at that time than on anything else before or since, and finally had to tell him I would veto such a bill. I could only reconcile abortion with the right of self-defense, namely the right of the mother to protect herself and her health against even her own unborn child if the birth of that child threatened her. It has been my feeling that our religion does justify the taking of life in self-defense. I cannot accept that simply on whim, even a mother has the right to take the life of her unborn child simply because she thinks that child will be born less than perfect or because she just doesn't want to be bothered. Well, the bill was amended to meet my demands, and I signed it into law. Now, however, I have discovered some of our psychiatrists are particularly willing to declare an unwed mother-to-be to have suicidal tendencies, and they do this on a five-minute diagnosis. The result is that our medical program will finance more than 50,000 abortions of unwed mothers in the coming year on such flimsy diagnosis. Well, I didn't mean to let you in on all my problems, but just to give the background of why you touched a nerve with your strip the other day. Thanks very much. Nancy sends her best. Please give our regards to your lovely girl. Sincerely, Ronald Reagan, Governor. Wow to the two of them is what I say. Wow to the two of them. And I guess so, too, one might say there's another one who changed his mind on it, Ronald Reagan, when he saw what it became. There were a lot of Democrats who were in support of Roe versus Wade. I remember one particularly conservative Democrat out of Arkansas who said, of course, we thought Roe versus Wade was right at the time, but seeing what it became and how it was used to justify no limits whatsoever for any reason whatsoever, we became appalled by what we thought would indeed be a small number here and there for dire health consequences, became nothing more than another version of birth control after the fact of conception, not before the fact of conception. And a lot of people did move that way. So what's interesting to me, too, and this goes to the ever-present issue of how our country has changed, and I'm consumed by that. Ronald Reagan, in 1983, did something that I don't think anyone would recommend who's a political consultant today. He wrote a book. He wrote a book at the end of his first term going into a re-election on abortion. He was the first sitting president to write a book in office. I believe he used to be the only one, but that has been supplanted because maybe one of the Bushes or Barack Obama did a dog book or something. I don't know. But at the time, he was the first president to write a book in office. And it was called Abortion and the Conscience of a Nation. And it came out that year after a piece he wrote for the Human Life Review. And it is a damn strong thing. And I think it's worth going online and reading it. I think it's worth going online and reading how Ronald Reagan thought about and wrote about abortion. I will tell you that if you don't want to see comparisons to slavery and Lincoln, don't read it. If you don't want to see claims made by people like Malcolm Muggeridge, don't read it. If you don't want to see a gentle and philosophical defense of the pro-life position because you think that it's more important to elect Republicans than to have Republicans be elected that actually stand for something principled, don't read it. Ronald Reagan had none of those compunctions, and boy, do I yearn for a Republican Party that didn't either, that doesn't either. A Republican Party that knows that if you do the right thing, people will come your way, regardless of what the temporary polls tell you. Mr. Bill's favorite Winston Churchill quote of mine is apt here. It's hard to look up to someone when they have their ear to the ground. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Dombrowski is the president and founder of Grand Canyon Planning Associates, GrandCanyonPlanning.com, his website. Great place to learn more about Grand Canyon Planning Associates. Great place to reach out to John if you'd like to. And he brings us our culture and economy update. How are you doing today, sir?
Very good. Thank you, Seth.
It's nice to talk to you. Joe Biden, president, was taking some questions from reporters today, and someone asked him about new inflation reports. Here, can I quote you from the transcript?
Yes, please.
We have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%. Can we just stop right there? It was not 9% when he took office.
No.
And we have a new report today that has everyone running around. Can you straighten it out for us, sir? What's going on?
Yeah, and the market obviously did not like
the
news.
Yeah, no, the market responded, shall we say, poorly.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because prior to the report, which came out about an hour before the market opened, all of the futures pointed to a positive day.
Yeah.
But boy, as soon as the report came out, you know, reporting a 3.5% annual rate of inflation, the expectation, you know, was lower than that. And, you know, going from February, it was at 3.2. And so this bump up higher, it's basically 10% from the prior month, right?
Sure.
3.2 to 3.5. And this really threw the market into a little bit of a tailspin initially, and reversed the positive opening that was expected, and immediately went into the red. And the market's closed down pretty over 1% on the Dow.
Yeah.
So it was it was not the best day, and actually interest rates spiked.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some of the highest interest rates on the 10-year Treasury since November, and mortgage rates went up, and that, of course, is hitting all of the home builders and the, when it comes to stock prices and other areas of business that would be affected by higher rates. Now, tomorrow is another report, too, Seth. We've got the, consumer price index that was reported today. Tomorrow we've got the producer's price index that's going to come out prior to the markets open tomorrow.
Okay.
I would probably expect we're going to see something similar again tomorrow, that things will be a little bit higher than expected based off of what we saw today. And even if it's, within close to what was expected, it's probably going to be a bit of a volatile time for the market over the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
The one benefit, I think, or nice thing that I did see today, when we look at these areas of the market, when we price the markets, the different indexes, the S&P 500 was bouncing off of what would be maybe considered some type of a floor. Even though we had weakness today, it didn't break through a level that I think was an important level. And if we can stay above that level, that's probably a good sign for a more long-term move higher for the markets.
Okay. We had talked, I think as recently as yesterday, about the Fed making a move here, and we thought it would be later in the year. Not necessarily this summer, but the president said it might be delayed a month by something like this. Is that something
I think we've got? We've got confirmation that they're probably not going to lower rates in the second quarter,
okay.
I think, based off of this report. And again, the Fed's target is still 2%.
Yeah.
We're at 3.5% on an annual run rate.
Yeah.
And you're really going to have to wait and see what next month brings, and then, and so on. So it's going to be a few more months.
How big is that, John, in inflation measures? How big is that, a point and a half? Is that like, in a lot of places, a point and a half wouldn't mean a lot. In inflation, it means a lot, doesn't it?
Well, it sure does. And especially if you think a 2% to a 3.5%, that's a substantial difference.
Yeah.
If we were talking, 3.25 to 3.5, okay. Or if it was, 1.5% higher from 9 to 10.5, that's not as much, right?
Right.
But that's a pretty big, pretty bold, goal, I guess, for the Fed to get back to 2% when the economy is just humming still along here. We're seeing the possibility of wage increases, which could cause more inflation.
Yep.
It's going to be an interesting time. I really don't even know if the Fed, I believe they will hopefully get to at least one rate cut this year.
Okay.
But it's going to be a tough road, and they're going to play and wait and see. They're not going to jump the gun, that's for sure.
John Dombrowski, thank you, sir.
You bet. Check out our website, GrandCanyonPlanning.com. You can schedule an appointment with me right there. Securities and advisory services offered through Creative One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, Creative One Securities LLC, and not affiliated. Thank you so much, Seth.
You bet. Talk to you
Bye.
Soon. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Doug is in Carefree. Hello, Doug. How are you?
Hi, Seth. Doing good. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
If I could pile on to some of the inflation talk.
Sure.
Last week, I read a statistic that the M2 money supply has shrunk by about $500 billion. Well, maybe $500 billion. You know, it's 21. It was 22.6, I think, and it's like 21.7 or something like that.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I don't have. I'm driving. I don't have the numbers right.
That's okay. M2, if I remember, is cash on hand stuff, right? It's liquidity, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all those things that aren't counted in the M1.
Right.
But mostly cash. You know, very liquid kind of stuff.
Right.
And it's odd. You know, what if the money supply is shrinking, which means those dollars aren't chasing goods, how do you still have inflation?
Yeah.
Well, you still have inflation because the Fed should never have raised rates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Powell is using, you know, something that Bernanke wrote, you know, I guess it was in the 90s, about how he would have responded to the Great Depression. And basically, you know, so you're killing business, okay? So why isn't that killing inflation? You're killing jobs. Why isn't that killing inflation? Well, because the Fed and the federal government spent somewhere north of $12 trillion
correct
since 2008.
Correct.
Maybe even $14 trillion, you know, and it's all still sloshing around.
Yes.
You know, and so, you know, you can raise rates to 20%, 25%, you know, and yeah, that would kill the economy, and you might kill inflation at that point to get it down to 2%, but this is a fool's errand.
You know, I would agree with you on that. I would agree also our strategic petroleum reserve policy has added to the problem. And I would say the deficit spending and the new energy taxes have caused the problem as well. I mean, I think we have much bigger problems than anyone is letting on. Not to mention there's this word I kind of learned. You and I know the word precarious, you know, threatening or dangerous. Precarity. People have precarity. I've learned that word recently. Everyone's just kind of nervous because no one feels that we're on settled ground economically, no matter what Joe Biden tells you.
Well, they absolutely should be nervous because central banks are basically just waiting for things to go completely to, you know, HE yeah. double hockey pick.
Right.
Fix.
Right.
I mean, right. It's so we're on the cusp of a recession. I mean, if we're not in one, and, you know, if the Bureau of Labor Statistics was actually using old formulas
correct.
for the way they did things,
correct?
You know, so there's a site called Shadow Government Statistics,
okay.
And the guy uses the older formulas, and it's eye opening.
Wow,
the unemployment numbers are fudged. Everything is fudged.
Okay,
we as far as you know economic data, we're now the People's Republic of China.
It's so weird how these government agencies just change the way they account for things. I noticed it, obviously, with something that was easier for me to understand during COVID, how they played games with the numbers. But, yeah, they're doing this. Why would it be different anywhere else throughout the government to make themselves look?
Yeah. Damn lies.
Right. Yeah.
So, and I guess the big point I would ask you to consider or have asked your guest next time he's on
sure.
is, If M2 continues to contract, because it hasn't contracted for 9 decades,
yeah,
this is the first time since the Great Depression that the M2 has contracted.
Yeah,
if we still have inflation as M2 is contracting, then we're in a worse pickle than we can even imagine.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because all the hopium that the quantitative easing has created, at some point those chickens will roost.
Yeah,
you know, and you know. When we have a 5,000-point sell-off, it'll be a very interesting day. But
let me ask you this. I mean, you, Doug, you obviously sure. know a lot about what you're talking about vis-a-vis the economy, and the economy is a top-three issue for voters, at least on voters' minds from the polling I've seen. What's the number one issue for you? Is it the economy or is it something else?
Well, I'm a national security nerd, so
yeah. –
Basically, us turning our backs on the Ukraine. So Russia picks a fight, or actually, we pick a fight with Russia in 2008 over Georgia, and then we pick another fight via Victoria Nuland in 2014, the Maidan thing in Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know, and so we pick a fight. And good, bad, or indifferent, you know. But once you pick the fight, you know, and swings, and then the guy that you're backing into play, you know, is belligerent, and he's in the fisticuffs and pugilistic endeavor, and then you get cold feet.
Yeah.
You know, and you stop funding the war material that the guy needs to finish the job.
Yeah.
We haven't freaking won a war since World War II.
Maybe the first Gulf War. But then arguable on that point as well, because I know there was post-debate. But yeah, yeah.
Okay, I was in the first Gulf War.
Okay. I shouldn't be speaking.
You know, Colin Powell and Scowcroft, after they saw the images from the Highway of Death,
yeah,
essentially forced Schwarzkopf to stop.
Okay.
And we were on the cusp. I mean, I could see the Republican Guards. I was shelling the Republican Guards. I was killing the Republican Guards. Okay. And we got told, stand down. I was so freaking mad because everyone knew, got to finish the Republican Guards, otherwise Saddam stays in power.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the feckless nature of our leaders, we start fights, we don't finish them, and we let these countries get bled out because of fights that we are basically starting, you know, so... Anyways,
well, you know, on the national security front, it's so interesting to me that you said it first before you go, in case you do go. Let me make sure I do thank you for your service, Doug. I appreciate it. And we all do. So thank you. That being your issue, national security, or at least one of your top tier issues, it's interesting. It's about fourth or fifth or sixth for most people. I've always thought it needed to be higher. You know, when we had high inflation and terrible foreign policy, the year was 1979, 1980, Ronald Reagan spoke about both. There was no one saying stop with the national security stuff. He spoke about it in every single speech, as well as the problems with the stagflation, as well as the social issues. You know, it's perhaps less on people's minds because we don't have leaders who are willing to speak about it clearly. And I think that's a real error on our part. I think we have way too many massaged political consultants or political consultants massaging what the candidate is supposed to say. And whether it's on the abortion stuff or the national security stuff or the economic stuff, Doug, I just think it's a lot of pabulum. I don't think anyone is leaning with direct, clear, straight vision that can bring people along. And I think that's the problem. Anyway, I got to take the break, but I really do thank you, sir.
Okay, God bless.
God bless you. Room for more, 602-508-0960. Be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, portions of which are brought to you by YRefi. YRefi offers a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio. And guess what? All this talk about the stock market and the Fed, it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve at all. With YRefi, they invest flexibility with you. You can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you choose, and a lot of control. Also, there are no fees with YRefi ever. No fees, and there is total peace of mind in that there is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement, too. No surprises. YRefi is based here locally. Their offices are on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. You can go visit them. I've been there any number of times. They won't give you a sales pitch. They won't ask you to sign anything. If you don't see them in person, do check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. Or call 888-YREFI-24, 888-YREFI-24. With YREFI, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. We came in with that song, Mr. Bill, Children of Sanchez, a Chuck Mangione song. It used to be the Channel 12 News theme song when I was growing up. And if you hear at the end of that incoming, there's that high blast trumpet note. It's not Chuck Mangione. I believe it's a high E. I think it is. Anyway, it's a trumpet player named Jeff Tysick, who's a very well-known, tremendous trumpet player. And I was just thinking, because we were playing the other day Herb Alpert's Casino Royale, where we have the trumpet player Bud Brisbaugh playing just after the bridge, way beyond anything Herb Alpert could ever do. But everyone knows who Herb Alpert is, and no one knows who Bud Brisbois is, unless you're a trumpet player. Everyone knows who Chuck Mangione is. No one knows who Jeff Tyzik is, unless you're a trumpet player. But very clearly, these backup players or these lead trumpet players in their bands were much better than the star up front and the guy who was making all the name and fame. And it was just curious to me. I wonder if they ever thought, those lead trumpeters who were less famous, they ever thought, what's that guy doing up front? I wonder. Or if they were just professional enough to know, this is the gig, this is the job, and I'm grateful to be backing him up. On the other hand, I also wondered if the lead, the famous person, the star, the Herb Alpert, the Chuck Mangione, if they're ever thinking, how come I can't play that good? I don't know. If I could get a trumpet player like my friend Greg to call in and help me with this, I'd love to know. We have a lot more coming up. And open line, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.